Ian Nels.
Debbie, we're almost out of time, but in 10 seconds, you're doing a big dance event yourself for charity today. Tell me what that is.
Yeah. We're dancing for Southport after that terrible incident during the summer holidays. All our dancers are getting together.
So many dance troops. Well, that felt, like they felt that so strongly. Debbie Chatley, yeah. Dance teacher from Cardiff, thank you very much for being with us.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
And good morning if you're just joining us. It's 9 o'clock on this Sunday morning. It's Felicity Hannah and Chris Warburton in the headlines now. The Labour Party conference, its first in government for 15 years, is getting underway in Liverpool today. The lead up to the event has been dominated by a number of leaks from inside government. Sir Keir Starmer says they damage everybody and it's his job to do something about them. Our political correspondent Alex Forsyth says Sir Keir is hoping to put a difficult few days behind him.
Because of the week that the party's had, this week we've had all of that drip, drip constantly of stories about, you know, the gifts of clothing, the gifts of spectacles, the tickets to the football matches, the pay of Sue Gray. I think that has just set quite a difficult tone going into this conference. And there's like a consciousness that they need to find a way to deal with that so that they can get on with talking about what it is that they want to, which is what Labour plans to do in government.
Some breaking news to bring you. Police in Alabama say at least 4 people have been killed and dozens of others have been injured in a mass shooting which took place in the Five Points South District of Birmingham, Alabama. Just after 11 p.m. local time, officers remain on the scene. We will bring you more details on that story as we get them.
The Israeli military says Hezbollah has fired dozens of rockets into Israel in what the Iranian-backed group has described as an initial response to the simultaneous explosion of communication devices in Lebanon last week. There have been reports of Hezbollah rockets landing much further into Israel than before, close to the port city of Haifa.
The Crown Prosecution Service says it twice considered bringing charges against the former Harrods owner Mohammed Al-Fayed, but on both occasions it concluded there was no realistic prospect of a conviction. Dozens of women have come forward with allegations of being sexually assaulted or raped by the billionaire who died last year.
And Donald Trump has ruled out taking part in another televised debate with Kamala Harris, the Democratic candidate in November's presidential election, said yesterday that she had accepted an invitation from CNN to hold a second head-to-head debate on the 23rd of October. But speaking at a campaign rally in the battleground state of North Carolina, Mr. Trump had this to say.
The problem with another debate is that it's just too late. Voting has already started. She's had her chance to do it with Fox. You know, Fox invited us on and I waited and waited and they turned it down. They turned it down. But now she wants to do a debate right before the election with CNN because she's losing badly.
That was Donald Trump. Now, I confess I didn't follow the fight live just because I had to get to bed and go to sleep. But, you know, that's the perils of doing a breakfast programme. It was the first thing I looked at when I woke up this morning and I wanted to see the highlights. And I did not have on my bingo card, I have to say, that Dubois would fell Anthony Joshua 5 times and knock him all over the shop, basically.
So I was on Paddy's show yesterday after I'd been on with you guys and we were discussing it and he said, right, which way do you think it's going to go? I said, look, I'm no boxing expert, but one thing that I'd looked at, and this stuck out like a sore thumb, was the amount of knockouts that they'd both had. So AJ had 25.
Yeah.
In, you know, 30 fights or whatever it was. And Dubois had 20. But I was thinking, well, if there's a chance of... I mean, they're obviously both just heavy hitters,
no,
right?
Definitely I could have seen a knockout finish, but I just couldn't have seen AJ being taken down that many times. Because normally if you're, you know, hit by someone the size of Dubois, you know, in a heavyweight bout like that, then it might be the end of it, right? But to go down and to be fair, he did keep getting up. But the last time it was, as Ronald McIntosh in our commentary was saying, he is in the midst of a nightmare. And that's absolutely what it felt like, didn't it?
No, it's true. It is true. It was great fight commentary, wasn't it? I have watched the clips back. But yeah, I was all radio this morning when I came in. It was a great way to watch it. Your mind was on Petanque though, mate, wasn't it?
I'll tell you about that later.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Okay, I swear, that's a tease, isn't it?
really.
So obviously, Daniel Dubois is waking up this morning. I'm guessing feeling slightly sore, but very happy with himself. The biggest win of his 24-fight career last night. He does have, I'm guessing, probably laying somewhere near him, the IBF heavyweight title belt as well. Of course, AJ, where does he go from here? They're the questions. We'll have some more reaction later on throughout the morning here on Five Live. In today's Premier League action, the champions Manchester City are at home to Arsenal. That is a big one. It kicks off at 4:30. Before that, though, Brighton play Nottingham Forest at the Amex as well. That kicks off at 2:00. Of course, you can hear both of them in Five Live's Premier League Sunday from 12:00. Australia very smug themselves this morning with a 2-0 lead in that 5-match ODI series against England. A big thumping 68-run victory in Leeds yesterday. England standing captain Harry Brook was left to answer more questions about England's batting failures once again. I think they're about 65-5 at one point. And in Rugby Union's Premiership opening weekend, of course, Leicester Tigers beat Exeter Chiefs, Saris beat Gloucester, and Dragons won the first Welsh derby of the new URC Championship campaign. They beat Ospreys.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live, the voice of the UK.
Sunday Breakfast. Listen on BBC Sounds.
Good morning, Sunday Breakfast with Chris Warburton and Fliss Hannah. And for the first time in 15 years, senior Labour figures will make party conference speeches as government ministers when their annual conference officially starts in Liverpool later.
Yeah, the Deputy Prime Minister Angela Rayner is today's keynote speaker and is expected to announce measures to protect renters. But the new government, of course, has experienced scrutiny in recent weeks in rows over freebies and gifts, the salary of a top advisor and those cuts to winter fuel allowance.
Earlier in the show, I spoke to our political correspondent Henry Zeffman. I asked him what impact that might have.
I mean, there's two things that go on at a party conference. Yeah, on one level, you have all the same people who gather in Westminster, cabinet ministers, junior ministers, MPs, advisors, officials, so on, all together just in a different place, Liverpool this week. And then you also have all the party activists, party members and so on. There's kind of two conferences existing at the same time. And definitely among the kind of officials, politicians and so on, the mood has been dampened, not just actually by the last week of stories, but also about the kind of gloomy government messaging, even though most people I speak to think that's necessary about the tough things to come. What I don't know, and we'll get a feel for over the next few weeks, is whether all of that has also dampened the mood among the party faithful, among the party grassroots. If it has, then I think that's really significant, and certainly the onus would be on Keir Starmer to find a way to lift their moods before the end of this conference on Wednesday.
Well, they say a week is a long time in politics. Labour's been in power about 2.5 months now. And as we say, this is Labour's first conference in government for over a decade. We thought we'd catch up with some of the Labour voters that we spoke to during the general election campaign. I'm joined by Harry Aldridge from Plymouth, who was a first time voter. He's just finished sixth form and now off to the University of Oxford. Harry, morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for being with us. Congrats on finishing sixth form. I remember.
Thank you so much.
The dizziness of that feeling. Joining you, Harry, is Charlotte Williams from Barnsley, who's chief executive of a community development charity. Morning, Charlotte.
Morning.
Okay, so I mean, 2.5 months, and some of those weeks have been quite rocky, haven't they, Charlotte? Earlier this year, you told us you were going to vote Labour, and you did. Are you still happy with that?
Yes, I mean, I haven't always voted Labour, but I did it this time and I am not unhappy with the choice that I made.
Harry, first time voter, happy or unhappy with your choice?
Well, I'm happy with the choice I made. I never expected Labour to offer a quick fix. I think they've inherited some really difficult challenges, whether it be public services on their knees, whether it be a really difficult situation with our economy. We've heard about the huge shortfall in the public finances, but I think they've taken some really positive steps in the right direction. I think, for example, resolving some of the industrial action we've seen has been an example of Labour really getting to work and starting to implement some positive progress.
Harry, I'm just going to guess that you studied politics at A-level. Am I right?
I didn't study it at A-level, but I will be at university.
Fantastic. You're just really, really across. Oh, university. When's your Freshers' Week?
I think it starts at the start of October, so I go up on the 7th of October, so just over 2 weeks now.
I'm just sitting here burning with jealousy. Charlotte, how do you think then these first 2.5 months have gone? Because some of it, you know, it really lends itself to the headlines. It's made a lot of the front pages still this morning. You know, the passes for glasses, the freebies. You know, could you get a sense that people are a bit fed up already?
I think what most people would be looking at is, you know, we're being a bit, it's a bit of a smoke shield this, you know, let's talk about glasses and suits and that. These things have always happened. This isn't unique to the Labour Party and Keir Starmer right now. And I think some people are using it as an excuse to try and detract from some of the really great stuff that's happened and some of the difficult decisions that they've had to make. And, as a, you know, I think, as a general public, we're a bit wiser than that, so stop trying to kid us with, has somebody had a couple of quid for a pair of glasses? I'm a bit over that. A
couple of grand.
It is a couple of grand, but like I say, you know, it's not new. This isn't a new thing that's been happening. This has always happened. Prime ministers and people in authority have always had those benefits. And what I'm really pleased about with the Labour Party is they got into power, they should have gone straight on summer break, and most of them didn't. They just cracked on and got on with some really difficult things. And I totally agree with Harry that, you know, that they've had a lot to deal with and they've dealt with it quite quickly.
Harry, bright-eyed, idealistic, fresher, does it not, you know, do you see this as a bit of a failure, or are you still upbeat about what the next 4 years will bring?
Well, I still feel upbeat. I think it has been a challenging few weeks for the government. I mean, we know that Keir Starmer has said he won't accept any donations of clothing going forward. So I think there is probably now a desire in government, as much as possible, to try and draw a line under this controversy, to try this weekend at Labour Party conference to really redirect the focus back to policy. I think for me, the most important thing is that the rules are followed. And in all of the cases which we're talking about, we know about these donations because they're in the public domain. They have been declared openly and transparently. And I certainly don't think they're comparable to some of the scandals we saw under the last government, whether it be Partygate, Flatgate, or even the unlawful prorogation of Parliament.
I was waiting for the gate on the end of that. Harry, I mean, do you think that everything happening within the rules, okay, fine, fair enough. Do you think that perhaps it was a bit politically short-sighted? I mean, you know, taking the tough decisions they say they have to make to fill the £22 billion black hole is what we keep hearing, doing things like taking away the winter fuel allowance, but then accepting, you know, freebies to go and watch Arsenal play and freebies to fill your wardrobe.
Well, I think that some of the hospitality Keir Starmer has received at Arsenal, for example, I do think that's understandable. I mean, he has a season ticket. He will be paying for that. And because of security reasons, it's probably more convenient for him to sit somewhere else. So I think some of the donations which we've heard talked about are understandable. I think the real focus here now for the government needs to be to try and reassure the public as much as possible and then to redirect the focus back to policy, because ultimately at the end of these 5 years, the government are going to be judged on policy and some of the things which they've been able to implement. So I think that's what they'll really be trying to do at Labour Party conference over the weekend.
Charlotte, do you think that this has all been a big distraction from policy, or do you think that perhaps not enough has been done to kind of put policy out there, get people talking about that, and in the vacuum, it ends up being about glasses?
Well, I think we need to remember that the story's being put out there and not being put out by the government. This is, you know, media and other, you know, other people are deciding what stories are going out there, and people are deciding what stories they're reading. And if you dig down a little bit, and I believe most people do, Harry clearly does because she's as smart as a button, you know, that they have been doing an awful lot. So we've already got renters reform. Doesn't directly impact me, but I support it 100% because we need to protect people. We've already looked at green energy. We're already doing pay deals. This is in 13 weeks when other governments would have been sunning themselves on holiday. So I think it's a bit of a smokescreen, to be quite honest.
Now, you work in a community development charity. You're working closely with your community. I mean, has all this stuff cut through? Are people, do they care about it? Do they know more about maybe the freebies or Sue Gray's pay than they do about the policies and the plans to change rights for renters?
Well, I think they probably do, but that's through no fault of their own. That's about what information is out there. And like I say, it's about who controls how information gets out there and who sees what. And of course, it's a great headline story. You know, so-and-so's got a pair of £2,000 glasses while they're snatching the money away from pensioners in heating. You know, that's a great screen grab and all that. But you don't have to scratch the surface very deep to see that there's more to that story than meets the eye. And, you know, they have followed the rules. The rules might be wrong, but they can change the rules. And, you know, I'm much nearer the winter fuel allowance age than probably a lot of the listeners and that. And people keep bandishing that about us, oh, it's the worst thing ever. And, of course, it's a shock. And, of course, we'd like to give everybody everything. But some things need to be means-tested because everything else is. And, you know, that is the thing that everybody is trying to beat up, you know, the Labour Party with. But I think, again, there's more to that story than meets the eye.
Well, we will be bringing all the newslines from the conference to you here on Five Live over the next few days. But for now, Charlotte Williams in Barnsley, Harry Aldridge in Plymouth. Thanks both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Harry, really enjoy university. You'll have a blast.
Oh, thank you so much.
Oh, I'm so jealous. I'm so jealous. You're so right. He will have an absolute blast. Right. It is 9:15.
On BBC iPlayer.
I want to take you on tour. I want to take you to India.
Wow! Buzzy mitts.
I've never been anywhere like it.
Freddie Flintoff's Field of Dreams on tour.
We're representing England, but we're representing something far bigger than that. We're representing Preston.
Watch on BBC iPlayer.
Hot Honey, we've been talking about. No, not that. All right, get your mind out the gutter. Real Honey, this is honey with chili. It's having a bit of a moment, in particular in Christmas. Videos on TikTok with the hashtag Hot Honey have been viewed 912 million times. As our listeners quite rightly said, that's probably people who weren't actually searching for honey infused with chili at all. I wonder how many might have been. Maybe about 10 of those people.
Making assumptions.
Yeah, we are.
We're going online for.
You're quite right.
I think, you know, food inspo is a big thing.
It's a big thing. It is a big thing. And pizza, that seems to be one of the places you're likely to find this above all else. But we had a load of texts. One listener suggesting only use a wooden spoon when it comes to honey because using metal will kill enzymes. Another listener saying, oh yeah, another listener saying, oh no. Well, how about this? Jeff, who's a beekeeper from Suffolk, has been in touch.
Hi, Jeff.
I take Jeff's word as gospel on this. Please stop perpetuating this idiotic myth that metal spoons kill enzymes. Enzymes aren't alive in the first place, says Jeff, but honey is extracted from the comb in a mostly metal centrifuge and then stored in a probably metal settling tank after being strained through a metal sieve to remove bits of bee and wax. Your spoon or knife is not doing any harm to the enzymes, which had already done their job in converting plant nectar to honey anyway. And yes, Fliss, if the label says made from a variety of sources, it's probably mostly glucose syrup, which may or may not have passed through the mouth parts of a bee. There we are.
Is that how they? That is how they make it, isn't it? They chew it, or... I've said this with confidence. You don't think about it, do you?
We're going to... It'll just mean another text from Jeff.
It will.
Which is fine. But,
I've learned a lot from that text from Jeff.
Yeah, we're going to get Jeff on to talk about the future for Anthony Joshua after this as well. I wonder what Jeff thinks about Manchester City against Arsenal. It's Premier League Sunday here on Five Live. We'll have commentary from the Etihad this afternoon. 4:30 kickoff. Kevin De Bruyne, well, will he be involved? Maybe, maybe not. He was forced off at half-time against Inter Milan on Wednesday. Arsenal, though, welcome back Declan Rice, that's for sure. He missed the win over Spurs last weekend due to suspension.
Man City boss Pep Guardiola knows Arsenal have a formidable defensive record. They've conceded just one goal in the first five games this season, and they haven't lost an away game in 2024.
Saliba and Gabriel, they are incredible focus with Erling all the time. So it's not one against one, it's always two against one, sometimes three against one. So that's why it's difficult to attack them. So they didn't, I think in 24, they didn't lose away. It's not just one game or two games. There are many games. They are be solid, consistent in that.
So how's it going to be this afternoon? 4:30 kickoff, and you're going to get commentary from Alistair Bruce-Ball, who joins us now. Morning, Ali.
Well, you won't actually, Chris. You'll get commentary from me on Brighton against Nottingham Forest at 2 o'clock, which is your hors d'oeuvre.
Okay.
To Manchester City Arsenal, which is John Murray and Leon Osman. And the key question, I think, that hasn't been answered there is, does Pep Guardiola like honey on his pizza?
I would suspect he probably does.
Yeah, I think so too.
He'd be that kind of guy, but maybe not with chili. That might be a bit too.
That's how I like it most. A bit of andouille sausage and honey.
It is beautiful, isn't it? As for this game, I wonder how spicy Mikel Arteta wants it to be later, because that was hopeless, wasn't it? He has said he's going to set up his team to win, which is fair enough. And I was looking at comments from Rodri. He said after City secured the title in May that he knew they would emerge victorious when Arsenal came to the Etihad for a draw because they lack mentality. Mm. So Arteta has said, we're going to go and win. But if you look at some of the different factors here, no Odegaard, and so the creative spark has not necessarily been there, has it, the last couple of games?
Yeah.
And surely Arteta will be looking at what Inter Milan did against them in the week.
Yeah, and potentially, Chris, no De Bruyne, as you said, for Manchester City. So, and Odegaard sort of is Arsenal's De Bruyne. So you're taking a massive creative source out of each team. I mean, I've got a feeling, you know, last season the games were 1-0 at the Emirates and then there was 0-0 at the Etihad Stadium. So Arsenal obviously very successfully managed to shut out Erling Haaland last season. And that's how this game is going to be billed today, because Haaland has started like a train this season, hasn't he? 9 goals in 4 games. Yet all we've been talking about this week as well is, are Gabriel and Saliba, you know, the best centre-back pairing in Europe, which they arguably are. As Pep Guardiola sensibly said there, it's not just going to be about that. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a very cagey game again. And I think you can still have a game plan to go and win. You know, Mikel Arteta, Bukayo Saka said the same thing. We are going to go there. We've got a plan to try and win. But that doesn't mean it's going to be all-out attack and let's not worry about what goes on behind. You only have to look at Nottingham Forest, you know, winning at Liverpool last Sunday, which was a perfect game plan put into action, where attacking players got thrown onto the pitch late on by Nuno. They took their one chance and they scored the goal. Now, I'm not likening Arsenal going to Manchester City the same as Forest going to Liverpool, but there are so many good footballers on that field, and it will be a fantastic afternoon. There is the potential again, though, Chris, that neither manager will want to give anything to the other. So it could be one of those cagey tactical battles again.
It feels like it's probably going to go that way, doesn't it? I mean, like you say, though, you know, Gabriel and Saliba, if you look at the last three games, it does appear that they have Haaland's number, doesn't it? Because they barely allowed him a shot in the three games last season. And just talking more broadly about the two of them, it is that sort of classic centre-back pairing that, you know, you can think of the days of old. You can bring up loads of examples, can't you? But it doesn't feel there've been so many in recent times where you think, oh, yeah, they'll go down in history in a way.
That's right. I mean, you think of the one that immediately springs to mind for me in sort of recent Premier League vintage would be like Vidic and Ferdinand at Manchester United, who were, you know, two very different players but blended together beautifully. I think the difference nowadays with that as well, Chris, is you look at Manchester City's back line and it changes all the time. So you can't really land on a sort of a Stones and a Diaz, because there's a Kanji and Ake, you know, there as well, and Laporte back in the day. You know, all brilliant pairings in their own right. But Gabriel and Saliba are something special. It's taken them a while to build it. And the other thing, you know, you watched them last week in that North London derby. It's not only, you know, the brilliant job they do at the back, and David Raya has really stepped up this season behind them as well, which, you know, which adds another, you know, real weapon to Arsenal's armory at the back there. But it's also the chaos they cause on the set pieces. So you look at that North London derby last week and Gabriel scores the winner. And again, Arsenal sort of bade their time. You know, Tottenham came at them hard in the opening stages, but Arsenal were able to keep them out. And then it's Gabriel who pops up with the winner. So that could be another key factor in the game today.
Yeah. Let's have a word about Brighton against Forest then, because you're going to be there 2 o'clock. And both of them humming along very, very nicely, aren't they? I mean, either one of them, if Arsenal don't get a result, and either Brighton or Forest win, then they would go up to fourth, wouldn't they?
Top four.
Yeah.
Top four at the start of the season. Both are unbeaten. Both have got 8 points from their first four games. I've already mentioned that Nottingham Forest win at Anfield last week. I've got a feeling the game plan might be similar today, Chris. We'll wait and see what Nuno does with the lineup, but I sense they will sort of sit a little bit deeper. They've looked really solid defensively, sort of bide their time and try and catch Brighton out. If you watch Brighton last week against Ipswich, they don't really like it that way. I think they prefer teams that come onto them and then try and exploit the spaces they leave behind. So against Ipswich last week, Ipswich went there and sort of, you know, sat deep themselves, and Brighton sort of struggled to find a way through. João Pedro would be able to help them do that if he's fit for the game. Fabian Hertzler has said this week, the Brighton boss, that he really is their key man. But we'll just have to wait and see whether he's fit. But it promises to be a really good Premier League Sunday. Brighton, Nottingham Forest, and then Manchester City, Arsenal to follow.
Very interesting start to the season, actually, when you start looking at the table, isn't it? Because Chelsea, you know, despite a general feeling that they were at sixes and sevens going into this season, they're doing all right, actually. Yeah. And that's four games unbeaten now, isn't it? And actually, West Ham are not having the start they would have wished for at all under the new management. But that's a solid win for Chelsea yesterday.
Yeah, impressive, Chris. And then the game before against Bournemouth, I think they got a little bit lucky to get the win there. But, you know, we said at the start of the season, what a difficult job that would be for Enzo Maresca, just in terms of the amount of players that you've got to kind of sift through and work out what your best lineup is. And I was quite struck in the week, actually, where he very sort of clearly identified. So if you look at all their attacking talent and you think, well, you know, Cole Palmer could play on the right, or he could play off the strike, or he could do this. And actually Maresca made it very clear last week, and he addressed the journalist. I was surprised he made it public, and he went, no, I've got my two on the left. That's Mudrick and Sancho. Nicholas Jackson and Nkunku are playing for the centre forward role. Cole Palmer and João Félix playing for the number 10 role, and it's Madueke and Neto competing on the right. And you think, well, that's a little bit simplistic, isn't it? But maybe that is the way that it works. He picks four of them yesterday, and then he's able to bring the others on when he wants. And they've made a great start to the season, but West Ham were awful yesterday. They really were awful.
That's not great, is it? Villa as well, that was some turnaround, wasn't it? And the sort of, I suppose, the expectation at Villa now is just sky high in a way, isn't it? But they're still doing the business. Amazing, really.
Yeah, brilliant appointment in Unai Emery. They've added to the squad well. I think the real test, Chris, is going to be, so they've had a brilliant week this week. So they came back against Everton last weekend, then went off to Switzerland, performed really well on that plastic pitch, and opened the Champions League campaign with a win. And then were behind until late in the game yesterday and managed to turn it around there. It's just whether they can keep that going in the Premier League and in the Champions League at that level and keep all the players fit. That is going to be the test. But, you know, when you can chuck on players like John Duran, who came off the bench and scored yesterday. And they're another one, Chris, on set pieces. So actually just watching Match of the Day last night.
Yeah.
The goal that gets them ahead, which Ezri Konsa scores at the far post, that was an almost identical set piece to the one that got them the opener against Young Boys. They've got Austin McPhee, who works on the set pieces with them. And it's quite noticeable when they're defending a set piece or attacking one, Unai Emery disappears into the dugout. And Austin McPhee, the set piece coach, is the man who's prominent on the sidelines. But those are key to Aston Villa as well. And it looks like they're going to have another good season.
Yeah, he's Duran's sort of, he's becoming the ultimate impact sub, isn't he, actually? Coming on, I think he's got three goals now, hasn't he, from the bench? Is it four now?
Four, yeah.
All-time Premier League winners as a substitute.
Yes.
I'm just looking at the list here. Five guys, loads of them actually, who have got five. Javier Hernandez, he was a real coming off the bench type player, wasn't
Solskjaer's he? Solskjaer's one who springs to mind for me.
Yeah.
For Manchester United, where they had those four strikers and they used to chuck whoever it was
right.
on Solskjaer.
That's right.
I mean, back in the day, Chris, and this is going back, I always think of David Fairclough.
Well, he was the one.
He was super sub, wasn't he?
People have said that I'm the David Fairclough of Five Live, you see. Just coming off the bench, which, I don't know if it dates me and him really, but there we are. Anyway, good stuff, Ali. We'll listen out for you at 2 o'clock. Cheers.
Thanks, Chris. Cheers.
Nice one, mate. Bye-bye. Ali Bruce-Ball, he'll be Brighton against Forest at 2 o'clock. And, John Murray's going to be doing Manchester City versus Arsenal at 4:30.
Chris, we've had a text in from Tom in London. Says, ugly scenes at Wembley last night as we witnessed a former legend, now well past his best, truly suffering in the ring. A brutal assault. It's the crowd you feel sorry for. And things didn't get much better after Liam finished.
Nah. that's good. If a little harsh.
A little harsh. Liam Gallagher was performing last night, and reviews are mixed.
Yeah. In fact, I think we're going to talk about the boxing, aren't we?
Yeah.
Daniel Dubois.
Beautifully.
Very nicely done, and I made a hash of that. But Daniel Dubois, sensational result, dismantling Anthony Joshua in five rounds at Wembley. He dropped him multiple times to retain the IBF heavyweight title. And really, a big question mark now over Anthony Joshua's career.
Daniel Dubois reaches and lands the right hand once again, and he dips to the knees of Anthony Joshua. AJ holding his chin up like a weather vane. Oh, counter right uppercut. The left hook buckled the knees of Anthony Joshua, and he's down for the second time. Referee Marcus McDonald allows the action to continue as Joshua gets back up to his feet, but he's punched down to the canvas. So the bell sounds to begin round number four, and Daniel Dubois lands a left hook which deposits Anthony Joshua on the canvas for the third time in the contest. Anthony Joshua back into the breach, and he's in desperate trouble as Dubois barrels him over to the canvas once again. And Anthony Joshua moving as though he is wading through wet concrete. His feet appear leaden, his hands appear painfully slow, more clumping blows landing on the gloves and forearms of Anthony Joshua. And Anthony Joshua in the midst of a nightmare here at the National Stadium. And then a right hand from Anthony Joshua causes Daniel Dubois to back up, and another right hand, and another right hand from Joshua, and a huge right uppercut. But during the course of an exchange, a blistering right hand has deposited Anthony Joshua on the canvas. The towel has come in, and this contest is over.
Well, Daniel Dubois doesn't say much. He was obviously and rightly pleased with the win. Have a listen.
No, I'm a gladiator. I mean, you know, I'm just a warrior to the end, to the bitter end, and I'm just ready to go. You know, I want to go to the top level of this game and reach my full potential.
Loads of stuff on the BBC Sport website in response to that. You can see the press conferences afterwards and pictures from the fight and all the rest of it. It is 9:31, time for the news.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The Labour Party conference, its first in government for 15 years, is getting underway in Liverpool today. The lead-up to the event has been dominated by a number of leaks from inside government, which Sir Keir Starmer says damage everybody and that it's his job to do something about them.
US police say at least four people have been killed and dozens injured in a mass shooting in Alabama. According to officers, multiple shooters fired multiple shots on a group of people late on Saturday in the Five Point South area of Birmingham.
The Israeli military says Hezbollah has fired dozens of rockets into Israel in what the Iranian-backed group has described as an initial response to the simultaneous explosion of communication devices in Lebanon last week. There have been reports of Hezbollah rockets landing much further into Israel than before, close to the port city of Haifa.
And the CPS says it twice considered bringing charges against Mohammed Al-Fayed, but on both occasions it concluded there was no realistic prospect of a conviction. Dozens of women have come forward with allegations of being sexually assaulted by the billionaire who died last year. Angela Rayner, the Deputy Prime Minister, is speaking to Laura Kunzberg. We'll bring you some of what she has said in a little bit on the first day of the Labour conference. Before we go to the sports news, either of you played the old ball? You know, ball, patonk.
I have played patonk.
You play it?
I've not played it.
You don't play it? Never played
it's
it before?
It's like ball. You know,
yeah, you know ball. Yeah. Play it on the beach. You can play it at any kind of level. I've got into it in a major way. let's get real for a second.
Well, actually, yeah.
I've ended up playing it at least a couple of times a year when I've met up with similar mates, right? I don't know, it's just become a thing. We've got a little trophy and everything.
I love that.
But it's a game you can play with a beer, so, you know, there we are. And one of my mates encouraged me to go along yesterday after the show, so I was kind of half falling asleep. He said, no, let's go to this Patonk Club. It's in Stretford in Manchester. I said, Trafford Patonk Club. I didn't tell the people there where I was from, so if you're listening this morning, I didn't remember, now we're talking about it on the radio. But anyway, I got there, And there was about 30 people, very welcoming, lovely people, very, very nice. And we're chatting there, this and that about Patong. And one thing they told me, what would you call the little ball that you throw? If you were just calling it, you know, normal.
I mean, I don't know.
What you would call it? The...
Call it the chuck or...
No, I don't know.
What is
you'd
it?
Call, you'd probably call it the jack.
The jack?
Wouldn't you?
Yeah, probably.
I would have thought. I mean, that's what it is in bolts, yeah, isn't jack, it? Yeah. The jack. The jack. Right?
I don't think I'd call it anything.
So there I... Well, okay, but there I was casually calling it the jack. Yeah. And they were like, no, the cochonnet, because obviously it's a French game. The cochonnet, do you know what? And they would shorten that to the cosh. So you just call it the cosh all the time, which is French for piggy.
Yeah, piggy, yeah. Was
yeah, like how a kid would call it a little pig, so a piggy. So there it is. So forget the jack. But the main thing was I started playing with these people, and it turns out a lot of them play for England.
So yeah, wow. You know, this is the
so Fliss, you were saying, you know, you was just saying Chris was here, wasn't he? Oh, I'm not taking, you know, casual, don't play that seriously.
Yeah,
well, yeah, you know, international
standard.
Does that mean that
I just slipped in at the international standard
level? Does
that
mean that you've got a ranking now?
I don't know. I think I'm possibly 500th in the country.
506.
How many people?
Players, yeah.
So there were 30 people there yesterday. You and your mate.
They were saying they had been in an event, and I'm surprised we've never covered it. Now they were at an event in Lowestoft last weekend where there were 800 people competing.
No,
they showed me photos.
Wait.
It was a big operation, man.
So you were the 32nd best player there out of... You
know. I'm 801st in the country. That's where I rank.
That's good. It's good. Hey.
For now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Watch this space, people.
Anyway, go on, what's going on?
This is great. This is brilliant. I'm going to ask you every week how your Patong career is progressing.
Not very far.
Please do.
I love it. Daniel Dubois is the name that is reverberating around the sporting globe this morning, isn't he? The morning after the night before, of course, is where he wrecked Anthony Joshua's hopes of a dream career ending with a right-hander for the ages, several right-handers for the ages. Dynamite Dan detonated a fifth-round shot after dropping AJ three times in the previous four rounds to keep his IBF world title and ruin AJ's dream spring mega fight with Tyson Fury. That does not look likely to happen now, does it? Dubois' promoter, Frank Warren, was asked when his next fight might be.
He may want to be out of the game before Christmas, we'll see. But whatever happens, we'll keep him busy. He's a young man, he's at the top of his game tonight, but I think he'll improve as a fighter on the strength of these last few results.
Yeah, he's only 27, is Daniel Dubois. There's plenty more on the boxing pod with Buncey, of course. There is a massive match in the Premier League this afternoon. The two teams that have finished first and second for the past two seasons go head-to-head. Of course, I'm talking about Manchester City hosting Arsenal. City are currently facing a hearing over those 115 alleged breaches of the league's financial rules. In his pre-match press conference this week, we did talk about this a little earlier, Pep Guardiola, unprompted, addressing the hearing while addressing a question about criticism of his team's isolated bad performance.
I want to defend my club, especially in these modern days, like everyone is expecting to be not relegated, to be disappeared off the earth, the face of the earth, you know. I would say that we had better afternoons than the opponents, you know. We had better days than the opponents. That's why we win a lot. It's not much complicated to understand that.
You can hear Manchester City versus Arsenal in Five Lives Premier League Sunday, of course, with Steve Crossman and the gang at 4:30. Before that, there's commentary of Brighton versus Nottingham Forest at 2:00. The Women's Super League also has a blockbuster in prospect. Manchester City, who missed out on the title last season on goal difference, go to, funnily enough, Arsenal. Arsenal women will play all 11 of their WSL fixtures at the Emirates this season. Their manager, Jonas Eidvall, is channeling a famous Billie Jean King quote, and he's even souped it up a bit.
Sometimes people say pressure is a privilege. I go one step further and I say pressure for me is a necessity in order to reach high performance.
Well, there you go. All the highlights on the Women's Super League show after Match of the Day 2 and, of course, on the iPlayer as well. This is worth pointing out as well. Harry Kane became the top-scoring English player in Bundesliga history yesterday. His 41st goal for Bayern after their 5-0 win at Werder Bremen. He overtook Jadon Sancho, scored 40 for Dortmund. From one on Sports Extra, Britain's Lando Norris will start today's Singapore Grand Prix from pole position.
That's a nice feeling that I didn't have to kind of go over and beyond, but it's tricky. Like the car's moving around, it's bumpy, it's easy to break 1 meter too late all of a sudden. So you pay the price for overdriving and over pushing. But I kept it cool and I did what I had to do. So I'm happy.
It's his fourth pole in six races. He's 59 points behind Max Verstappen, who leads the championship, who will start second on the grid for Red Bull. Verstappen, of course, was victorious in the first seven Grand Prix, but he's failed to win any of the last seven. Lewis Hamilton starts third. A thrilling finish beckons for the final day of the PGA Championship at Wentworth. Rory McIlroy shot 66 yesterday. He's at 15 under. He's in a share of second, three shots behind the Italian Matteo Manassero, who has a nice healthy cushion at 18. Under. And Five Live Sport, Premier League Sunday on air from midday with everything else covered for you and plenty more to come during Colin's show from 10, of course.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
On digital radio.
On BBC Sounds.
And ask your smart speaker to play BBC Radio 5 Live.
Pressure is a necessity. It's funnily enough, what I kept on saying to the Patank crew yesterday. Yeah. All the way through when I was there.
You mean bull?
Yeah, all right, I said bull earlier.
Patank.
Patank, Patank,
the bull. Way he plays it, it's bull.
That's what they were saying as I was leaving, yeah.
I like to call it lawn balls for people that can't bend down.
Oh, my knees are gone, Colin. They're long gone.
We were playing a clip there and I said to him, who's third? And he goes, Lewis Hamilton. I'm pretty sure Lewis Hamilton hasn't scored the third amount of goals of any British player in the...
in the Bundesliga.
Bundesliga. Because I think it's got to be Keegan.
It'll be Kevin Keegan for Hamilton, right? Surely, yeah.
Paul Lambert's got to be in the top five. Maybe he was there long enough, wasn't he?
Yeah, probably.
Who else has been
struggling
there
after that, really? German teams.
Sancho, no?
Sancho was two.
Oh, he was two.
But you start running out, really. There's not that many. Stato to get a... Is there a top ten?
Statman Dave.
I bet there's not a top ten.
Right. So you only looked at the first two, is what you're saying?
Yeah, of course.
All right, fair enough.
I do, yeah. Come on.
Should we get the weather? And then we'll speak to Colin properly. Here's Simon.
Good morning. It's been a pretty active few days with some pretty intense downpours and thunderstorms causing some issues. And today across England and Wales, you may be woken up this morning from some thunderstorms, particularly around some central areas of England. As we go through today across England and Wales, we're going to see some showery rain continuing on and off, and some of the showers could be heavy and thundery once again, mainly across Wales, the Midlands, Eastern and through southern areas of England. Later on today, there may well be some brighter skies developing across East Anglia and the South East, with temperatures generally getting to about 17 to 20 Celsius. Across northern England, it's looking a little bit drier. There will be some thundery showers moving their way into parts of Merseyside, Greater Manchester, southern areas really later on this afternoon, but staying pretty cloudy in eastern parts of northeast England and across eastern and central Scotland, staying fairly cloudy today as well. But there'll be some sunshine towards northern and western Scotland, some sunny spells also developing across Northern Ireland today, and maximum temperatures 17 to 19 degrees, but around about 13 or 14 degrees right on those North Sea coasts. Simon King, Five Live Weather.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live,
the voice of the UK.
Sunday Breakfast. Listen on BBC Sounds.
Colin, who is looking very dapper, actually, going to be with you in 20 minutes' time.
Looking great, aren't it? It's almost like I'm still wearing the same clothes I wore yesterday.
I wasn't going to say.
It's a much more prestigious event.
This is actually your walk of shame.
What's going on?
Do you know what? I was at a lovely tribute event last night with Steve Cram for a guy called John, who sadly passed away. He put on the just an amazing work through his safari company's cycle rides. We've been on several times together in Kenya. Lovely night. But quite a late one. So drove down here, teetotal last night. Drove down here, got here about 3 o'clock. Went to check into my hotel and they were like, you checked in tomorrow, call unlucky. Saturday night, sold out. And so I was like, right, I'll just have to kip under Tony Livesey's desk in the office, which is what it is.
Well, it's handy because he keeps a blanket under there.
He keeps a blanket under there.
Yeah, yeah.
He does indeed. Exactly. An electric blanket, because when you get that age, it's a bit cold.
Yeah, exactly.
In here, so...
pop his slippers on.
Yeah, so under went into Livesey's sleeping bag. So still wearing the same clothes.
Very good. There are showers, you know. You could still nip over there.
Yeah, there are.
Goodness me. I never knew that. Yeah. Someone should tell Rick Edwards.
Right, go on. What's going on?
Everybody now. Are we ready to move on?
You pick your targets, people you know. You got to be quite careful. That's why I always have a go at Chappers. You have a go at the person you know the best, I think, is always a good tactic. Yes, it's all football preview from 11 o'clock. and a lot of different stuff in the first hour. So working backwards, that's an amazing day, isn't it? The Man City Arsenal, then an Arsenal Man City. So the Premier League WSL packing two stadiums, the same two teams, is just wonderful.
Yes.
So we'll do both. We'll do Paul Dickoff at one end in the Northwest and the Premier League. Then we'll switch your attention to WSL getting on the West weekend. Arsenal's very own Kim Little is chatting to us. So that's a wonderful way to set that up. And then Forest, what a start to the season they've had. They've got Brighton away to Brighton. Could they follow up that win at Anfield with a win at Brighton? I argue almost as difficult to keep that momentum going after that win. And Viv Anderson, the ledge, joins us today. So that's good. Half 10 is the sixth installment of our great football songbook. It goes to one of the most unlikely songs ever to appear on a terrace, which is Goodnight Irene, which is a very morbid song. Goes back to the 1800s, Lead Belly recorded it, and then it goes into the Weavers and all sorts of versions of it. And it is the Bristol Rovers anthem. We look at that today with Ian Holloway, Pat Nevin with me as always. That's great. We're going to kick off, though, with the boxing. Two very special guests on that to react to what happened last night. And also, last day today, the Sabudio World Cup, which, unlike your batonk, is a real sport. So, so Sabudio World Cup, it's in Tunbridge Wells where it was invented.
Yeah.
Do you remember the advert?
Sabudio. Oh.
Yeah, I couldn't find it today. I was looking for it everywhere. I couldn't find it. Yeah.
That's bizarre.
Find loads of weight. I didn't know it was about in the like 60s and 70s and all. But yeah, it was, yeah.
I remember wrecking a like sort of medium sized snooker table, which I turned into a football pitch for Sabudio, which
very
was a nice little
indeed.
Touch, wasn't it? Yeah.
It's very good.
Talking of Viv Anderson. Did you see he's having an auction, which is always a bit, you know, of a shame to see, isn't it? But an auction of some of his memorabilia.
See, I'm going to talk to him about that.
Yeah.
And it's exactly what I'll say to him later, because I think we get over emotional about it.
Yeah.
I don't think he thinks that. I think we think that a footballer has every top and every medal in a frame. And really,
they put a box in the attic.
Yes. They keep him like, I've got that old pair of Gola.
Yeah, exactly right.
From like the 1990s in a box in the garage. And I think that's the same with him. And he's three kids and he's going, and Viv Anderson's not the era of, you know,
megabucks.
He would have been getting a grand a week.
That's it, isn't it?
And it would have seemed like huge money then. But it would have been a grand a week, and it doesn't last. And, you know, European Cups, he probably was still living where he grew up, two European Cups in the bag. So I think it's great.
Why would
you want them in a garage for ego when he could give his kid a better wedding or whatever? Right, but we'll see. Exactly. He might say it's a heart wrench. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, it'll be interesting. Good.
Love it.
Lovely stuff. Cheers, Colin.
Thanks,
nice one.
Colin.
See you later. Right. Colin's going to be with you from 10 o'clock.
I wish someone would buy the junk in my garage.
You never know.
Well,
do a yard sale.
It doesn't feel quite like.
Have you got any old wake up to money memorabilia, which, you know?
Oh, yeah.
An emotional wrench to.
Old scripts and notebooks. Ooh, page turning.
Yeah. Now, the Deputy Prime Minister, Angela Rayner, has been interviewed, as I say, on Sunday with Laura Kunzberg, and she was challenged on the whole thing of accepting free outfits.
Lord Ali gave you individually more than £20,000. What did you promise or give him in return?
I promised nothing and gave him nothing in return. What the donors and that have helped me in the past have done is seen someone that's come from a very working class background, and as you said before, I say it how it is, and I've always tried to fight for people, and since having the honour and privilege of being the Deputy Prime Minister and the Secretary of State in Housing, I've got a significant number of bills in the King's Speech because I want to improve people's housing. I want to get on with the job of supporting people.
And we'll
however,
come to these
a feature of our politics at the moment is for me to stand as the Deputy Leader, and you've seen the leadership contest at the moment in the Conservative Party. They will be getting donations to enable them to continue that work. That is a feature at the moment of our politics. That's why transparency is really important.
But Lord Ali got a Downing Street pass. Now, that gave him incredibly privileged access. I think a lot of people would imagine that's the kind of thing you would have been absolutely kicking off about if you had still been in opposition. Who signed off Lord Ali getting a pass?
Well, I don't know, and I didn't see Lord Ali in that period, so I don't know about that. I didn't see him in Parliament. I didn't see him in Number 10. I've been getting on with the job, and I don't know about who gave him a pass or not, but it certainly wasn't because of any donations that he'd given to me.
So that was Deputy Prime Minister Angela Rayner on Sunday with Laura Kunzberg, which I think is on as we speak, but you can catch on iPlayer if you want more of that. Now, A barrage of rockets has been fired into northern Israel from Lebanon overnight. The Israel Defense Forces say most were intercepted, though some homes were hit. Hezbollah said it had fired towards targets in northern Israel in retaliation for last week's pager and walkie-talkie attacks. Toby Green is visiting lecturer in the Department for Political Students at Bar-Ilan University in Israel. Toby, morning. Toby, are you there? Toby Green. Well, we're
Good morning.
Toby, there you are. Toby, thanks for being with us. How do you see this escalating situation between Israel and Lebanon?
Well, Israel has set a goal that it must return civilians who are in northern Israel who've been out of their homes for 11 months now, some 60,000 to 80,000 of them. Israel set a goal to return those people to their homes. And from Israel's perspective, that requires Hezbollah to stop firing at their communities and to withdraw its forces away from the border, which is something it's mandated to do under UN Security Council Resolution 1701. And Israel's been launching waves of attacks against Hezbollah, so far very targeted. And their goal is to degrade Hezbollah, but also to send a message to their leader, Hassan Nasrallah, that unless he comes to an agreement, this is going to get worse and worse and worse for him. So it's both military strategy to degrade Hezbollah, but also kind of psychological strategy to send a message to Nasrallah that things are going to get worse and worse unless he stops firing at Israel and pulls his forces back from the border.
So we saw those pager and walkie-talkie explosions earlier in the week, then a leading Hezbollah commander killed while below ground. The Israeli Defense Minister, Yoav Gallant, said earlier this week that this was a new phase in the war. What do you understand by that?
Well, I think that's the case. I mean, the Israeli government a week ago now added formally to its list of war aims from the war that began with Hamas's assault on October the 7th. The initial war aims were the destruction of Hamas and the return of Israel's hostages from the Gaza Strip. But Israel added to its official list of war aims also the return of its civilian population to northern Israel. As you're probably aware, Hezbollah began launching rockets at Israel in support of Hamas after Hamas's assault on October the 7th. And until now, Israel's major focus has been fighting the war in the Gaza Strip and has essentially been had a essentially more defensive strategy on the northern border. But Israel, the Israeli government has been under immense pressure within Israel to act decisively against Hezbollah to enable Israel's civilians who have been evacuated from their homes in northern Israel to return. So the attention in Israel is now turning to address directly the threat of Hezbollah. And Israel is the Israeli government is sending the message that it's no longer willing to tolerate this situation and is willing to act militarily to change the situation if an agreement can't be reached diplomatically.
What's the mood in Israel when it comes to just the nature of these attacks? You know, particularly, I'm thinking of those pager, those walkie-talkie explosions this week, which killed 37 people and could be described as an indiscriminate attack. You couldn't be sure that they were with the targets when they detonated. And the UN Human Rights Chief Volker Turk has said that violated international humanitarian law.
Well, the mood in Israel is one of great concern and anxiety. The country's been at war for 11 months, and the way Israelis feel and perceive it, they're at war in a multi-front war against an Iranian-led axis, which includes Hamas, which of course initiated the war with its assault on the 7th of October. It includes Hezbollah, which is the most heavily armed non-state military actor in the world. It includes the Houthis in Yemen. It includes Iran firing directly. It includes Iranian proxies in Iraq and in Syria. So Israelis feel very much that they're fighting really for their survival in the region, for their right to live in security in the region. And there is deep internal divisions within Israeli society on many issues. But Israelis do feel that they are fighting for their right to have a Jewish state in the midst of the Middle East against this Iranian-led axis of extremists that are committed to their destruction. And that really dominates how Israelis perceive, you know, its right to take action, military action against its enemies, including the very unusual pager attacks that you mentioned.
Thank you. And does this suggest, this increasing escalation with Hezbollah, with Lebanon, does it suggest that Israel is stretching itself quite thin because of what's going on in Gaza? Or is there a sense that that means that the Israeli government feels the situation in Gaza is under control and it can now turn its attention to the Lebanese border?
I mean, there is great concern in Israel about the overstretch of the military and the society as a whole, which has been at war, as I said, for 11 months and has, you know, taken a very heavy toll in terms of the military operation in the Gaza Strip. And, you know, there is a concern about whether this is the best moment for Israel to be launching a much broader military operation against Hezbollah, which actually poses a greater military challenge even than Hamas does. That's been part of the dilemma that Israeli decision makers have been wrestling with over the last few months, perhaps part of the reason why Israel has not sought to escalate directly with Hezbollah until now. But in the absence of a diplomatic agreement or a ceasefire arrangement in the Gaza Strip, which could lead to a ceasefire in the north, it seems the Israeli government has reached the point where it feels that it has to act.
Toby Green, visiting lecturer in the Department of Political Studies at Bar-Ilan University in Israel. Thank you very much indeed. It is 9:54.
Live Premier League Sunday.
Mikel Arteta to Arsenal is confirmed.
We were sad when he leaves. He's a ball for beyond a good manager.
Arsenal have confirmed the signing of Declan Rice.
Manchester City have agreed a deal to sign Erling Haaland.
Champions again. They've won it 4 years running.
I think Arsenal get even closer again.
Their level is higher and higher.
Five Live Premier League Sunday.
Welcome to you, Manchester City against Arsenal.
Listen today from 12 on Five Live and BBC Sounds.
Yes, it's one of those days where you've got Manchester City versus Arsenal in the Premier League and also in the WSL as well. 12:30 kickoff in the Women's Super League. Arsenal facing Manchester City. You've also got Liverpool playing Leicester. Spurs facing Crystal Palace. Oh, we can speak to former international Helen Ward, who's with us. Hey, Helen, morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, very, very good. And I suppose the big story from this opener for Manchester City and Arsenal is going to be Vivian Miedemar, isn't it? One of the greats of the game, scored 125 goals in 172 appearances for Arsenal, for goodness sakes, and now a Manchester City player.
Yeah, I think not only is it the story of the game, it's the story of the opening weekend in the WSL. It's as soon as those fixtures came out, it felt almost inevitable, but she had a fantastic time at Arsenal. And then for me, they've made a mistake in letting her go to one of their rivals on a free. But for her, I think it's a really good move. I think it's going to revitalise her. And from what I've seen and heard in pre-season and in the Champions League in the week, she's finding her form, and it could be a really, really interesting day at the Emirates this afternoon.
Is it that signing which could at least give City a more fighting hope of being able to catch Chelsea this season?
Yeah, I think so. I think it is. It's a big, big move. And you add her to Bunny Shaw. They've already got goals in their team. Mm. You put the two of them together, it's quite frightening. And I think they've made some other really clever signings as well, Manchester City. And I think they're looking good. And I do think they'll be the biggest challengers to Chelsea, who, of course, have added strengths of their own over the summer. So hopefully it's going to be a really exciting season from start to finish.
Arsenal not going to make it easy, though, are they? I mean, Alessia Russo, for one, obviously up front, which most of our listeners will be familiar with that name. But actually, the following now at the Emirates, I was looking at some statistics. I said them earlier on in the programme, actually. They're quite remarkable, really. Last season, the average attendance for their home games at the Emirates was 32,618, the highest in the Women's Super League by about 20,000, and the 15th highest of any English side, men or women. And if you just took their six league games at the Emirates, the average would be 52,000. Only seven Premier League teams can better that figure, which is amazing, isn't it? I mean, I suppose you're talking about an average over six games rather than, you know, across a whole Premier League season, for example, but cheaper tickets and all of that. But still, you know, you've got to tempt people to get off their backside and come in the first place, whatever the price.
Yeah, 100%. And they're leading the way. They have led the way off the pitch for many, many years, Arsenal. And, you know, that's credit to the people behind the scenes. But over the last couple of years, as you said, the attendances they've been attracting at the Emirates have been fantastic. They've outgrown their home at Bournemouth, which was, you know, it served them so well for so long. And yeah, okay, it is cheaper tickets, but there's still people that are making the effort to go to the games and go and watch them. And more importantly, come back. And I think that's the key thing here. It's, you know, many teams have sold out stadiums or they've done a one-off game and it's been a really big attendance. But how many of those sides are getting them coming back? Whereas Arsenal are doing that. They now just need to add the trophies that they're so used to winning in years gone by. They just need to add those back. I know they've had the Continental Cup in the last couple of years, but they want FA Cups. They want league titles. They want to go deep into the Champions League. And there's just been something missing. You know, even on Wednesday, in the Champions League qualifying first leg, there's something not quite right. There's something missing. They've got a squad full of unbelievable talent. There's something just not quite working for them at the moment. But they have got, you know, a chance of competing again this year, of course. But I do think Chelsea and City could be the ones to catch for everybody else.
You're right, though. They've got some really star players in the lineup, haven't they? So it's going to be a cracking game this afternoon. As for Manchester United, good win for them to get things going against West Ham. Can they do better than last season? Fifth it was last season, wasn't it? Do you expect them to push on?
I think they can do better. I don't think they will be up there challenging for the title. I think they'll be fighting for that fourth place, if I'm honest. Maybe third, depending on, you know, good run of form, possibly like we saw a couple of years ago. But again, there's something they've had a bit of turnover in terms of players. They've lost some really important figures. They've lost their captain, Nikita Paris, leaving on deadline day as well, losing a lot of goals. And yes, they've added some players to that, but I don't know. I'm not sure that they're going to be up there.
Don't sound
year.
That convinced, Helen. But anyway, listen, thank you. Thank you very much indeed for your time. Helen Ward, highlights of the game shown on the Women's Football Show, by the way, 11:30 on BBC One. Thank you, Fliss.
Thank you, Chris.
And thank you for your company as well. Stay with us. Colin Murray's up next.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News at 10 o'clock. This is Anthony Birchley. The Deputy Prime Minister, Angela Rayner, has defended a number of gifts given to the Labour leadership, insisting the system for donations is transparent. She denies breaking parliamentary rules while staying in an apartment belonging to the Labour donor Lord Ali during a holiday in New York. There have also been questions about clothes given to Ms Rayner and Sir Keir Starmer by the peer, who was given a Downing Street security pass despite not having a government role. Speaking on Sunday with Laura Koonsberg, Ms Rayner said she understood people were upset.
I get that people are frustrated, in particular the circumstances that we're in. Yeah. But donations for gifts and hospitality and, you know, monetary donations have been a feature of our politics for a very long time. People can look it up and can see what people have had donations for, and the transparency is really important.
The Crown Prosecution Service says it considered bringing charges against the former Harrods owner, Mohammed Al-Fayed, twice. The CPS says on both occasions it concluded there was no realistic prospect of a conviction. Dozens of women have come forward with allegations of being sexually assaulted or raped by the billionaire who died last year. Israel has come under attack from a barrage of about 100 rockets fired by Hezbollah in Lebanon. Hugo Bechega reports from Beirut.
The attacks from Hezbollah come after major blows for the group, including an Israeli strike in Beirut that decimated the chain of command of its elite fighting unit. Air raid sirens blared across northern Israel as rockets flew deeper into the country's territory. Hezbollah said one of its targets was an Israeli military production facility in the city of Haifa, and that this was an initial retaliation for the explosions targeting the group's communication devices. In response, the Israeli army said it was striking Hezbollah targets in Lebanon and that its attacks would continue and intensify.
Veterans and members of the armed forces will be joined by the Princess Royal at the Oosterbeek Cemetery in the Netherlands today to commemorate the 80th anniversary of Operation Market Garden. In 1944, thousands of Allied troops parachuted into Nazi-occupied territory with the aim of securing crucial bridges over the River Rhine. They failed and suffered heavy